public forum. And let's see how many cards I have. Abby Taylor Silva, I have Steve Schimmick, Craig Stewart, and Joy Hupschmidt. If anyone else wishes to address the board on any item not on the agenda, now's the time to do so. So, Ms. Taylor Silva?
Good afternoon, Chairman Young and fellow board members. I'm back from maternity leave. My name is Abby Taylor Silva with the Girl Shipper Association. So it's nice to see you all again. Last week, our members, I'm going to speak to you in regard to the ag waiver. Our members turned in their annual compliance forms, a requirement for tier 2 and 3 growers. Many growers spent days and weeks and some spent months compiling all the information necessary to complete this 11-page, 160-question document for each of their farms. From your perspectives, the level of monitoring and reporting by farm documented in this form far outweighed any regulatory document they've had to complete in their lifetimes. Many felt they did not have the staff properly trained in their operations necessary to answer all of their questions, and were concerned about their inability, in some cases, to answer questions with complete assurance of the answer's accuracy. They were told by region board staff to answer the questions as best they could, and while they appreciated the response was concerning, being that they were going to be held liable for any information that was inaccurate. A basic and necessary tenet, in my belief, of any regulation is that it be understood by the industry regulated and those enforcing the regulation. And time and again, unfortunately, we saw this wasn't necessarily the case. There continues to be a lack of trust of staff by many members of the industry, although there were some very helpful staff members giving guidance to those who called. That said, there was also a number of conflicting messages received. For example, one of my members left messages with two separate staff members in order to get an answer before the deadline. When the calls were returned, he was told by one staff person they didn't have to provide the nitrate concentration of their primary irrigation water source if they were in the cooperative monitoring program or had elected that on the NOI. Another staff member who returned this call the same day said that he did. Additionally, many growers felt that it was unfair that although the annual compliance form hadn't changed since September, they had to authorize that their NOI was current, which meant they had to log in to their NOI, at which point they asked 7 new questions about crop types, chlorpyrifos, diazinon, fertigation, chemigation, wells, and sustainability. In some cases, they felt these questions were outside of the jurisdiction of the order, but were compelled to answer them in order to have their annual compliance form met by the deadline for fear of large fines. From the farmer perspective, the regional board is but one of many regulatory agencies that oversee production. There's CalOSHA, DPR, FDA, EPA, CDFA, the Labor Commission, USDLA, APCD, Land Use and Zoning, USDA, PACA, you know all these. What farmers see is that the regional board has placed itself as the highest level of monitoring and reporting of any regulatory agency, state, federal, or local. And while they're trying to comply with regulations from all levels of government, the requirements of which in some circumstances contradict the regional board's order, and this is frustrating. I'm getting feedback that the regional board staff either don't understand or aren't concerned when these challenges are brought to their attention. There's also a feeling that certain questions on the form, for instance regarding permits for clearing land, were not consistent with the order and are outside the purview of the regional board and outside the scope of the NRP and order. Staff have dismissed those concerns, stating to us that the description in the NRP was not intended to be a verbatim description of the content of the annual compliance form, but the type of information to be included. This response didn't feel to some growers as though any type of question might be asked, as long as staff feels appropriate, irrespective of the order in the NRP. And would appreciate more oversight by the board and stakeholders to determine what is appropriate and consistent with the order in this compliance form. We also received feedback that the Central Coast Water Board staff held a workshop with agricultural representatives, including the Grower Shipper Association and technical assistance providers, to review the content of the annual compliance form in an effort to show that outreach had been sufficient. A copy of the draft annual compliance form was provided only one day before the meeting, and from feedback that I received, as I was not available at the time. From the perspective of Lonnie Growers, consultants, association representatives, and technical service providers, staff disregarded each substantive comment that was submitted. I received feedback that this type of outreach was not undertaken in good faith. This has been a key problem from the very beginning of this process, and true outreach and input would have developed an understanding and trust, and this underscores the basic problem of lack of trust between board staff and growers. As I mentioned before, we were told by some staff that growers were still required to provide nitrate concentration of their primary irrigation water source on the farm. And we have been under the impression that growers who selected this option wouldn't have to provide this data. Additionally, the maximum concentration which was asked for on this form may not be indicative of the averaged, blended, or typical nitrate concentrations in irrigation water actually used by a grower. Thus, not only do we feel that requesting this is inconsistent with the NRP, but it is an improper question that provides information out of context. And by requiring this data, there is now a major disincentive for growers to participate in such a program. Our partners are seeking development of a groundwater monitoring program that is spatially distributed, statistically defensible, and strategically planned. We believe this program will provide better, more accurate basin data to the benefit of growers, the public, and the regional board. We are now concerned that few growers will want to participate, making such a program financially infeasible to those who do. While we are very interested in continuing to meet with staff and the board to rebuild relationships and trust, the experiences many of our members had with the annual complaints form did still feel adversarial and uncompromising. We hope that you will consider these concerns and others we have and will continue to express in writing and update the annual complaints form accordingly.
So, Abby, you reviewed, right, the letter, the November 29th letter.
Yes.
Did that address any of the issues that you've just raised? Because it sounded like I heard some of them
right. We
attempted to address with this letter.
I think that in regard to the letter, we did appreciate the quick turnaround on the letter. That was very much appreciated. Thank you. I think that the responses to the questions, yes, they were yes and no. So in regard to the maximum nitrate concentration, it didn't feel that there was really an understanding of the fact that what the question was being asked, which was what is the nitrate concentration in the water that's being used to irrigate, that is going to be blended water. And so the response said, you know, you can look back to the farm plan. Well, growers are still going to be then giving you information that they don't think is accurate in their annual compliance form. So while it did, and I understand it was a very quick response, and we went, you know, it's our fault that you didn't get the letter until 10 days before the annual compliance form was due. But we would like to keep on discussing these things because there are quite a few confusing items.
Well, we're going to be discussing these things continually.
In fact, something specific. My understanding from Gail from Western Growers is there's going to be a supplemental letter,
That's correct. I guess,
providing more detailed on what their concerns are, right down to describing paragraphs, lines, that kind of thing, so that we can look at the various issues. I've committed to Gail that I would meet with her in Sacramento at some point, and we would sit down and walk through those issues face to face, and then try to come to some resolution on those.
Okay.
Thank you. Additionally, I received an email just a couple hours ago from a grower outlining another concern. I know I don't have that much time. I don't know if it'd be appropriate to state it now or if you'd rather see that in written form.
Well, if you can do it real quickly.
Okay.
Because we want to get out of here because we're going to a field trip.
Sure.
So.
Okay. This morning I received a concern email from one of my members who's a small grower who farms fewer than 400 acres in total. He's concerned because his NRL updates changed his tier, so the updates he made last week, from a 1 to a 2, and these are his quotes. I discovered that water board labeling a range of land being adjacent to a supposed impaired water body. He says they are trying to slip this in as Chula Creek by cleverly calling it the South Branch of the Salinas River. I don't understand how this can be done. If this is a tributary that has never been known officially as South Branch of Chula Creek, it is probably just a field drain and has no name. This is very concerning, and if we start doing this, the whole Salinas Valley farming system could be considered as adjacent to an impaired waterway because it can be proven that just about all the farming ground is a tributary to the Salinas River. And this would make drastic changes to growers who are trying to be in Tier 1, making them Tier 2, and unintentionally, according to what staff originally shared.
Well, it sounds like this should be added to the list of, you know, issues that we should be looking at.
Very good.
So if you could incorporate that somehow into the responsive letter.
Absolutely.
That you've got. And because that way, when you address it to the board like you did, then it at least it involves my review of what staff is proposing, and I'm able to talk to Jessica and Ken about it and feel comfortable that, you know, we're kind of meeting the intent of answering the question.
Okay.
So, and if it doesn't work, we're going to just continue to go through this till we kind of distill this down to where it should be.
Okay.
Lisa, I think, wants to comment right about this, correct?
I just want to make it on the last comment from the small grower that I just reviewed. I wasn't able to get all the details, but I just wanted to make an alternative proposal on that one item.
Okay.
We have a Tier 1 request. A request for review of Tier 1, and this is a common issue that arises, that if we are able to work directly with that grower and we can look at the information that was uploaded to the database, we might be able to resolve it directly. And I'd be happy to have staff do that sooner rather than later and get the details, however, email or otherwise on that, instead of having to worry about waiting for a letter and a general response on some of the issues.
Then do it that way, and I guess if the grower is not satisfied with that initial effort, then bring it back.
Excellent. And we did give him that form yesterday, Lisa, thank you. It was, I had to go through past emails to find a link to it. It wasn't very easy to find, just from his review of your website, if it could be put up there. That'd be great. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Steve Shemek.
Soon, 8 minutes, 35 seconds. I get a lot of time here. Thank you. my name is Steve Schenck with the Otter Project in Monterey, Coast Keeper. Oh, gosh, it changed. So a couple things. First of all, on the comments that you just received, sometimes you are going to give answers that the people just don't want to hear. And that's just reality. What I'm here to mention today is a lawsuit that Monterey Coast Keeper and the Otter Project have against Monterey County Water Resources Agency. And the punchline will come at the end, so bear with me. But basically, we sued them 2 years ago claiming that they were a discharger, claiming that they had not updated their waste discharge reports, nuisance, and violation of public trust. The county of Monterey, embarrassingly, has spent $500,000, and that's by their requests, for this particular suit, $500,000 trying to beat back our lawsuit. And it was fully briefed, ready to go to summary judgment, and there was kind of a problem with that, but we ended up in the mandatory settlement conference before trial. And at that mandatory settlement conference, at the onset of it, Monterey County basically said, we're ready to go to trial. The judge asked to meet with them privately, and a few minutes later, the judge announced that Monterey County wanted to settle with us. You can read into that whatever you'd like. So the judge ordered that there be a mediator and that there be a technical advisor and that the process take a number of months and that we try and come up with a solution for the water quality problems in the lower Salinas Valley, specifically the Reclamation Ditch and Blanco Drain areas. Frankly, this is huge. And here's why it's huge. It's huge because, first of all, there's serious problems in that area. And I'm not talking about the whole lower Salinas, but the Reclamation Ditch and the Blanco Drain, which is the area to the east of the Salinas River. And this is going to impact you because you also have nutrient TMDLs that are coming down right now in that area being proposed. There's also the ag waiver. It's going to impact NOAA fisheries because they're also leaning on Monterey County Water Resources Agency to improve conditions in the lower drainage. And so my point is that, and here's the challenge for me, I can stick to the notion of a settlement agreement that resolves the lawsuit between Monterey County Water Resources Agency and the Otter Project. Or I can kind of think bigger and think about the nutrient team deal, think about NOAA fisheries, think about Ag River, think about ways that growers that participate in a big solution with Monterey County Water Resources Agency could get credit within the Ag River system as a project which is allowed in the order. There's lots of ways to think big. And I'm frankly challenged, not being a lawyer, of how we're going to, you know, think big in this arena when literally I'm going to be in a settlement agreement with an agency that's going to try and construe this very narrowly. So I just want to point out to you that we do have the potential for some big ideas here. And they could impact the agency because we literally decided a meeting, I want to say 10 days ago or 2 weeks ago, on the nutrient team deal for the Lower Salinas. It was really recently. And this could help that. This could help that. Any questions? We anticipate the process is going to take 6 months.
Great. Thank you very much for your comments. Craig Stewart.
Good afternoon. I appreciate the time. my name is Craig Stewart. I'm a professional engineer for Pinfield and Smith Engineers. I deal with hydraulics, hydrology, stormwater quality, and I'm here to speak about the post-construction stormwater management requirements for development projects in the Central Coast area. I have some concerns. I understand that the Central Coast stormwater quality requirements have now been adopted into the Phase 2 NPDES municipal permit draft tentative order, which has had the effect of cutting off the petitions that had been filed previously by a number of municipalities and others, which has cut off the ability to fine-tune the requirements and appears to me to have been, we haven't been able to address some of the changes that would be necessary to make the permit work much more smoothly. There's a number of serious concerns that a number of people have brought up. I'm working with the City of Santa Maria. One of the ones that I'm concerned with and am aware of is that the volumes that are required for retention and treatment are multiplied by what I'd call a funny number, and a factor of 1.963, almost two. The reference that it applies to very clearly says that it's being applied inappropriately. And when you go back to the original text, it's very clear that it's being applied inappropriately, and not. And as I understand from information I've received this morning, the text that they've referred to is not even current. It seems to me that what would be fair would be to be able to either allow the current requirements not to take effect immediately, so these things can be worked out, and perhaps at that time apply the current state regulations. Let Region 3 use those regulations that are applicable to the whole state. And otherwise, we're going to be getting into a situation where we'll be incurring unnecessary and expensive litigation for the state of California. We don't need that. I don't want to see that as a citizen of the state.
Okay. Isn't this what we talked about earlier? Okay. So the...
We've got another speaker on.
We do. Yeah, I know Joy from Santa Barbara County is going to probably mention the same thing on this. We're aware of this, and maybe we'll hear from Joy, and then we'll give you the response of where we're at in terms of responding to this concern. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So just one point of clarification, the state permit has not been adopted yet.
Right.
So their petition has not been affected yet.
Right.
And so I just want to make that clear.
Right.
Yes.
We'll make everything clear after we hear from Joy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I'm Joy Huffschmidt, and I manage the Santa Barbara County Clean Water Program, and I did want to address the post-construction requirements. As we get into the details of the regulations, we're finding that they are quite complex, and that our ability to accomplish them is becoming quite problematic. And this is especially the case with Attachment D mm-hmm. of the regulations. As you may recall, this was something that came out as part of the final draft order, and it was just before the adoption hearing, so there wasn't a lot of vetting of that attachment. And basically what Attachment D does is it first of all, it requires the 95th percentile standard, which basically doubles the 85th percentile standard that's being used throughout other parts of the state and the country. And it also includes the 1.96 multiplier, which again doubles the infiltration volume. So what we're required to do on the Central Coast is to basically quadruple the infiltration volume that's required of anywhere else throughout the state or the nation, as far as I'm aware. As you know, you directed your staff at the September hearing to work with the JURT and to try to work through the process to test the feasibility of it and possibly propose any necessary changes. And someone from Santa Barbara County is on the JURT, and they are working through that. And again, you heard from Mr. Moore this morning, and just brought up that the state is incorporating the Region 3 post-construction requirements into the new municipal general permit. They've got a workshop scheduled January 8th, and they're proposing to go to adoption here in February. And we in Santa Barbara County, and I think jurisdictions throughout the Central Coast, are pretty concerned about this, because what it does is it basically ties the Region 3 requirements to the state permit, so that if there are any revisions that need to happen, we need to do it twice. So we'd have to reopen the state permit in order to make those changes. So we would hope that they're not going to do that, and I recognize that you don't have the ability to influence that.
Well, we might.
You might, okay.
Yeah, I mean, we'll tell you what we're going to do.
All right.
As soon as you conclude.
Okay, well, I just, you know, we're in Santa Barbara, so we're going to take the opportunity
sure.
to get this on the radar screen to let you know that we do have some concerns. That we think that there are definitely details that may have been adopted, maybe prematurely, that need to be worked through. We're working through the JURT process, and we're hopeful that that's going to be fruitful, and hopefully this will be an item that will be before your board sooner rather than later. I would hope that you won't wait to hear an update, just prior to the September adoption, September 2014, when we actually, September 2013, when we actually have to get this up and running, so sooner rather than later. Thank you.
This was brought to our attention through board member Johnston, who had been contacted by somebody from the city of Lompoc.
Robert Kentley from the city of Watsonville.
So, Mr. Harris, maybe... Do you want to articulate and describe for members of the public what is kind of our response to these concerns?
One moment.
Okay.
A couple of things. One is, as the individual mentioned, there is a time window here during which we still can talk to the state board about any changes we propose. I think at this point, though, we need to work with staff and go back and look at this look at the issue and see what it is and find out what exactly at the JURT they're actually involved with in terms of what has been proposed and what staff is working on. But I think we want to be cautious about going back to the state board without good justification, so I think we need to move through this expeditiously but cautiously. And I don't know if Lisa wants to comment on the attachment D. As I had mentioned earlier, there is a process. My understanding was there is a process that the infiltration numbers are goals, not necessarily hard numbers, and that there is a process through which municipalities can work through, that it's recognized that not everybody is going to be able to reach those infiltration numbers, but we would like people to look at that, but that there are alternatives available to them. And that was my understanding.
Okay, well, I think maybe we should bring this back to at the January, February board meeting so we can have, you know, a better discussion. This will give staff a chance to look at these concerns that have been raised, and that we still have some time to send a letter to the state board if we're in agreement that something should be clarified or modified. What? Yeah, but the state board's not going to do...
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I was just asking Jessica if, after meeting with staff, for example, and if we make a determination there's a, I'm just, you know, there is an issue that needs to be changed, can we, can I, under my authority, request a change to this from the state board, or would it have to come back to this board? And she said, I have the authority, I could actually request the change be made, it would not have to come back to this board.
Okay. Mr. Johnston.
Yeah, my understanding from our state board liaison this morning is that the state plans at this point to hold a workshop in January on the Phase 2 MS4 general permit, and to with a target of adopting in February of next year. So that is a very short timeline, and I understand that the JURT has already been convened by staff, has met once on this, and that the Appendix D, I think, was the first subject that came up. And so I'm, you know, if we can get some resolution out of that, and if we can, you know, out of the JURT and staff combination, that makes sense, and have that sent to the state board, that's great. What I think I'd like to request is, I note that our next meeting is the 31st of January, and I think we've agendized the 31st of January and the 1st of February. We may only do one of those days. I'd like to suggest that this be agendized back to us as a report and or potential action item at that point, so that we have our options open. And we can hear back from the JURT process and or what the executive officer has done under his authority.
We can certainly do that. My concern is if the state board does not make any changes and the regional board decides in January to make changes, those changes may not go into effect because the state board will be essentially superseding our requirements with theirs. And so agendizing it for the regional board's action, you could certainly do that, but it may not be effective.
I understand that, and I would assume that if the state board is in the process now of incorporating the elements of the resolution which we passed, and if we were to revise that before they, in February of next year, pass their own resolution, I would be absolutely certain that they would look at that and take that into account. As to whether they change what they did, that's really up to them. And that would be, if indeed we felt on hearing back from staff and from the JURT and whoever else wanted to comment, that we had, we wanted to correct something in there. I think it would send a message to the State Board, and how they respond to it is really up to them. I understand that we don't tell them what to do. But I do think it's worthwhile. I think we need to, tell me if I'm wrong, but I think we need to, if there's the potential to take action, we need to agendize it as an action item. Is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay, Dr. Hunter, and then staff.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay, so just so that I'm following the line or the series of steps, if Mr. Harris has authority to make changes in the order, or to make changes in the criteria?
It wouldn't be that Mr. Harris would be making changes to the order. It was that if the regional board staff and the cities kind of came up with an alternative solution, they could write a comment letter to the state board recommending the state board make a change, but it wouldn't be at the regional board level.
I see.
He cannot alter the resolution itself. That would solely be for the regional board to do so.
Okay, so the authority that Mr. Harris has is to communicate, convey what staff and the juror group come to agreement on as a good alternative option.
Right.
And that fits within the order, as you just stated, that there are, that these are goals, that there's some flex in there, and that, you know, specifying how they can better achieve those goals would be a very good thing to do, and I think the sooner the better that occurs, so that State Board can consider what we are learning from the municipalities.
I'm not saying there is a problem. I'm just saying that we need to look at what the issue is and figure out if some change needs to be made. I think we can do that relatively quickly next week. We can sit down with staff and talk about what the issue is and what is the path forward and come to a resolution and communicate that with the State Board. The reason I'm cautious about going to the State Board is this whole permit has been up and down and sideways, and it has not been an easy process for them to get to where they are for many reasons. Our language is part of that that whole mix. And I just want to be careful, if we're going to ask for changes, that they are correct and they are justified, and we can explain it to the State Board. And if those are all true, I have no doubt that the State Board would honor our wish and make the change.
Lisa?
All I want to do is clarify that comments to the State Board are due on December 17th.
Okay.
And after the workshop, we don't know if additional open comments, people can go to the workshop to make their comments in addition to any written comments submitted on the 17th. So the urgency with which Ken is talking about to have some discussions next week is really going to limit the opportunity to bring it back.
Okay. Mr. Johnston?
I would say from where I sit, the idea would be to have some consensus come out of the JERT and staff meeting. May or may not happen. It's always a good goal, and sometimes it's more attainable than others. But if we do not have anything by December 17th, that is yet another reason to have it agendized as an action item for our end of January meeting, because even if comments are untimely at that point, I'm sure that a resolution of this board would be it would be another matter.
Are we okay with that? I support that, bringing it.
You can certainly do that.
Okay, so let's do that. And then Ken will be letting you know anyway when we speak weekly as to what staff has come up with in its analysis.
I should have something for you next week.
Good. Probably next Thursday.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
Do we know when the JERT is meeting with the staff?
When is it meeting? Don't know.
I can't see with these on.
I don't think there's a meeting scheduled next week, so we're just going to have to convene a way to talk to the key parties, and that's not a problem. So I can tell you when the next meeting if you're really interested, but I don't think that's that significant.
I want to make sure you talk to
Okay, thank you very much. Director from the Goleta West Sanitary District. I do not have a name.
Larry Meyer.
Larry Meyer, okay.
Sorry about that. I just will keep this very short, as I'm sure you want to get in this tour that you were talking about. I came up to say hello and wish that you were down here a bit more often. I've been to a couple of your upstate meetings, and I'm aware of your problems with Salinas River and runoff up there. But we'd like to see you more often. Oh, and since the child keeper was talking about sanitary overflows, I would like to point out we haven't had any in this year or last year or however long back it was since the last one. However, I'll keep this short and cut off here.
Okay, thank you. You know, one thing about our meetings, before I got on the board, Mr. Meyer, there were no Santa Barbara meetings for many, many, many years. And it only happens because there's a Santa Barbara board member. Now there's two. Probably getting one meeting a year is about all that you're going to see, unfortunately. San Luis Obispo is closer than to some folks up in Salinas or Watsonville. So
the trip to Watsonville is a long trip.
It is.
I went up for one of your hearings.
Yeah, it is. We've got a long, narrow district, region. But we're coming back, I think, in March, right?
In March, we'll be here.
So we'll be here in March.
Well, thank
you. Okay. Thank you.
Marksville's known as the Santa Barbara of the North.
Yeah. Think that way. Okay. Does any other member of the public wish to address the board at this time on any item not on the agenda? Okay. Seeing none.
Do you want to do the executive executive office
yes, right
board?
Now.
And then maybe talk about whether we should even do 13 or continue 13 to the next meeting.
Well, we can briefly describe 13 okay. And what it is and set it up for continued discussion.